WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. President Biden tonight says negotiators have made progress toward a bipartisan deal to avoid a default.
With regard to the debt limit, things are looking good, very optimistic.
This after a new Treasury Department calculation. The new date when the government runs out of money is June 5th. State Attorney General Ken Paxton asking supporters to protest when the State House could vote to impeach him in a rare Saturday session. If they do, he will face a state Senate trial.
This vote is expected to take place Saturday at 1 p.m., and I want to invite my fellow citizens and friends to peacefully come let their voices be heard.
Paxton is part of the House Republican majority that could still impeach him on charges that include bribery and obstructing justice. It's an official day of mourning in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro after a deadly Russian missile strike on a hospital and vet clinic. Two Army veterans who attacked the U.S. Capitol with fellow members of the Oath Keepers now sentenced to prison. This is ABC News. Federal prosecutors charging two climate change activists with defacing a Washington, D.C. museum exhibit.
Two climate change demonstrators who allegedly smeared paint on an Edward Degas exhibit last month at the National Portrait Gallery are now in federal custody, facing multiple charges, including conspiracy to commit an offense against the United States. The activist group Declare Emergency, which has also blocked roadways around Washington, D.C., posted photos of the incident that the Justice Department alleges caused $2,400 in damages. Timothy Martin of North Carolina and Joanna Smith of New York face up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine for each charge. Brian Clark, ABC News.
Louisville, Kentucky wants the public to review Justice Department claims and report on that city's police force. The DOJ found a number of Louisville police civil rights violations. Mayor Craig Greenberg today said some incidents were given a blue review, but no official investigation. Andy Field, ABC News.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Baseball's commissioner says Wisconsin needs to meet its obligation to keep up American Family Field. Rob Manfred was in Milwaukee yesterday to make his case. Milwaukee County board member Steve Taylor says he has mixed feelings.
Well, I don't want to see the Milwaukee Brewers go somewhere else. I mean, that's what's happening in Oakland. And so 2030 is coming. I just don't think it's right that the taxpayers foot the bill.
Governor Evers wants the legislature to use part of the state's $7 billion surplus to meet the public's ballpark maintenance obligations. A new report says all but three University of Wisconsin campuses will lose money next year. System President Jay Rothman is pushing lawmakers for more money for the UW system in the state budget. In sports, the Giants blanked the Brewers last night 5-0. Milwaukee starts Freddy Peralta tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
Turn your home into restricted airspace. Tell incoming flights you want them diverted. The new Raid Essentials light trap plugs into the wall and uses light to attract, then trap, flying insects like fruit flies and mosquitoes. Its 24/7 continuous attraction provides insecticide-free protection that's people and pet-friendly. Consider air service interrupted. New Raid Essentials light trap. Insecticide-free protection.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group Wisconsin Breaking News today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown.
Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGB. And on the Civic Media app.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Oh, now wait until you pull up to the stop and go light. But when you do, go ahead and save the Civic Media station to one of your presets. The Cripescast with me, Charlie Behrens, and also on the Civic Media app.
To stand up for their right to organize, to stand up for their right to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, to fight for their share of the wealth that their labor creates. Now, the surprise in this, I mean, if there had to be a surprise twist to this political theater that was going on in the Senate Banking Committee, It was Senator Mike Braun from Indiana. Now, Mike Braun is an ultra-conservative, far-right kind of senator. Policy-wise, almost nothing I agree with him on. But he came, showed up, now against the idea of organizing Amazon, an anti-union guy, you know, for sure, going to vote against the PRO Act, going to vote against, you know, things that are going to help workers. His vote going to be there because he's a Republican after all, and that's kind of where the Republican caucus has to be. Even if individually he may not be horribly against it. And this is what's wrong with our political system. It's that kind of pack mentality that ends up being part of what goes on. But Braun went into when he was running a business, and he let the secret out of the bag. And this is where, you know, any union organizer will tell you, we wouldn't need unions if employers, you know, learned certain lessons. Employers can ensure that there will never be a union in the workplace. And if there are employers out there listening, I'm going to give the secret away. Because Mike Braun, the senator from Indiana, he talked about it. He said when he employed people, he gave them the best wages possible, the highest wages possible, the best health care benefits possible, the best retirement possible, made them part of the family. He made them part of the family. And this is where the divide between huge multinational corporations, behemoths like Amazon, like Walmart, these giant, where you're just a number on a balance sheet, and the small mom and pop on Main Street. This is where the difference is. And I've always talked about the difference in when people are, you're anti-business. I go, no, I'm not anti-business. I'm very pro-business. I'm pro-mom and pop. I'm pro-small business. I'm pro-local community. I'm pro-worker and management working together. That's not what goes on in these big conglomerates. That's not what goes on in these big monster corporations where you're just a number. And you know that as well as I do. And Braun was saying, look, these were part of the family. So when someone was struggling, he saw their struggle. He was part of that struggle. And he even hit on something that I've talked about a million times, the fact that CEO pay is through the roof. You know, the reason Sanders focused on Bezos is Bezos is one of the richest people in the history of this country. And you've got workers there who are, well, homeless. You've got people there who are working for, you know, what are, you know, by today's standards, okay wages, but historically substandard. And I found this hearing interesting in that Braun was the guy who brought this and said, look, yeah, absolutely. We need better wages, hours, conditions. We need to go after CEO pay. And you go, wait a second. How you're the ultra-conservative, right-wing, anti-union vote, and you're talking our language. This is where there's common ground. Because I look at something like this hearing and you go, no, not a dime should be going to Amazon. And yet what we know is that we're going to give them $10 billion of taxpayer money for cloud services, and they're spending millions of dollars on union busting campaigns. We know that. We know they're going to continue to violate labor law, and we know that our laws are going to be ineffective to stop them, at least for now. And this is where it comes back to you and me. It comes back to us. Now, sadly, it didn't get as many headlines. This hearing didn't get the headlines that I wanted because there were some really great moments. You know, right at the beginning, you had Lindsey Graham going after Sanders, you know, attacking him for, you know, having the hearing at all. And, you know, Christian Smalls, one of the people who testified, the president of the Amazon Labor Union, before he started into his prepared remarks, you know, went back after Graham and said, hey, look, you know, you forget that the people are the ones who make these companies operate. He said, when we're not protected, the process for when we hold these companies accountable is not working for us. Then that's the reason we're here today. I think it's in your best interest to realize it's not a left or right thing. It's not a Democrat or Republican thing. It's a worker issue. And we're the ones that are suffering. You should listen because we do represent your constituents as well. This is the important part, and this is what, you know, was the glare, should have been the glaring headline, and was, and something I talk about all the time. This isn't a political issue. This isn't right left. This is up down. This is the very well to do and the wealth class against everybody else. It is that 99% versus the 1% frame on steroids. And Christian Smalls highlights that. Look, this isn't a Democrat or Republican thing. This is a worker thing. This is a low wage thing. This is a poor working conditions thing. This is a safety thing. And when Sean O'Brien testified, the new president of the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, he went after it as well. He said, look, it's the job of the federal government to encourage collective bargaining, to encourage worker organizing, not to allow companies to beat up on workers for pursuing their, for now, legally protected right to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. And he talked about, look, there was the Strategic Organizing Center put out a report not too long ago. In fact, we had their executive director on our program not too long ago. You know, talking about that the Amazon facilities have almost a double injury rate of any warehouse facility in the country. They are leading the industry by almost double in the number of injuries. And you go, well, that's just because, well, it's a tough job. Yeah, it's a tough job because of how they work people to the bone. And if you listen to the stories of these workers, which is why I thought what Christian Smalls did at Amazon in New York, the JFK 8 facility, was so important. And I think it is the model of organizing we need to return to. And I say return to because this is what I've been talking about for a very long time. It's how my grandparents' generation built their unions. It was person to person, neighbor to neighbor, friend to friend, coworker to coworker. It was being part of a community. It wasn't a business model. It wasn't something that was. It was your circle. It was part of your community identity. The union hall was the center of that. It's where people got married. It's where they celebrated births. It's where they grieved. The union hall was the center. It was like the church. It was the center of the community. And corporate America has done a very nice job of dividing and pulling us apart in those ways. And I like what they did at JFK 8. I like what those workers did with the Amazon labor union. Because they were internal organizers. They didn't drop people in. The workers themselves, they were empowered. And this is what we talk about, empowering you and me, empowering workers to know your rights and to stand up and speak them, which is why, again, I think the victory in Amazon was such a big one and so important. And the reason that we're having these kind of hearings, because of the attention that victory brought and the stories that came out of it. I mean, that's the amazing part of this. The stories that you hear from these folks about the working conditions and the constant surveillance and the constant harassment. And this isn't how it should be. And Teamsters President O'Brien talked about that. He said, look, you know, they've got these delivery service providers. They're basically, you know, you're your own boss. You get a mini, you get a van and you make your deliveries and you're your own boss. They don't actually work for Amazon, but they got the name on the side. They have to follow, you know, their rules. They're surveilled constantly with all kind of electronic monitoring. You know, how many, you know, how fast they're going, where they're going, how many left turns they make, right down to, you know, what kind of eye movements they're making. But they don't work for Amazon. If you don't work for the company, you're your own boss. But they're gonna gather all of the data and all of that from those people. And oh, by the way, the quote unquote your own boss person takes on all the risk. And what Sean O'Brien was saying is, look, those are Teamster industries. Amazon is taking down what are good family sustaining wage jobs in industries that the Teamsters represent, in warehouses, in logistics, in trucking, and delivery. And we're at this moment, and why I think this is important. why this hearing was so important is the future of this country depends on the decisions that we made yesterday and the ones that we're making today. And if this kind of business model is allowed to continue and thrive and take with it all of the middle class employment that it's already destroyed and take down all the mom and pop businesses on Main Street, it's going to be a very long, long future for working people, especially, you know, legislatively, as we're not moving legislation to help workers organize, as we have a judicial system that seems hell-bent on moving us back towards the days of the Lochner era, where if you're hungry enough and desperate enough to work for poverty wages in desperate conditions, that's your right, kind of like these, you're your own boss, gig economy jobs. The future, not bright for working people unless we organize and grab back the power that workers have. And this is that moment, and which is why I think it's important. It's important to take a look at this bit of political theater. Well worth the time, and we're going to get some links out on social media on how folks can take a look at that. Going to take a quick break. On the other side, I got some stories to talk about, some organizing victories going on, some exciting stuff. Also want to thank our good friends at Teamsters Local 1932 for being our exclusive sponsor for this hour. If you have any thoughts, comments, you want to check out their work, Teamsters1932.org, their website. Going to take a quick break, right back on the other side. If you're just joining us, make sure you download the podcast. Never miss a moment of the work that we do. Also, you can email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break, right back after this. Stick around.
Labor unions built the middle class, and the middle class built America. That's the message from Teamsters Local 1932, a strong and successful labor union based in San Bernardino that represents over 14,000 hardworking people across the Inland Empire. The Teamsters are ready to help you organize for better pay, increased benefits, and improved working conditions. Reach out to Teamsters 1932 at teamsters1932.org/organize to speak with an organizer today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So there have been some really big labor stories coming out here the last couple of days. You know, just since last August, think about this for a second. Since last August, when three Starbucks stores in Buffalo, New York, decided that they would file a union elections with the NLRB. There has been a flurry of organizing going on at Starbucks. I mean, the floodgates have opened. And, well, I mean, there are now more than, what is it, more than 50 that have won elections. There are more than, reportedly, more than 250 that are in the pipeline to have elections. And they've got a win rate so far of over 85%. I mean, that the floodgates are open there. I mean, they're just over the weekend, I saw wins in Ohio, Massachusetts, New York, Florida, Virginia, all across the country. And hopefully there will be a critical moment where Starbucks kind of steps back and goes, maybe we should stop. Maybe we should stop our union busting. Maybe we should stop trying to do what we're doing. Because clearly it's not working. And look, as I said, you know, a long time ago, steal a quote from my grandfather. When a rich guy takes a buck out of his pocket to tell you you don't need something, you spend two to get it because they understand return on investment. And this is this. You got rich guy Howard Schultz, who, interestingly enough, and this is one of those weird things, again, back to my political divide. It's not a Republican or a Democrat thing. It's a worker thing. Howard Schultz was slated to be Hillary Clinton's labor secretary. How scary would that have been, given the fact that he has done everything he can do to bust up the organizing that's going on there? But, you know, this is this moment where you go, you know, organizing is contagious. You know, winning is contagious. And if you look at what's going on at Starbucks, I think Howard Schultz will tell you there's a pandemic of organizing going on there at Starbucks. And that is good. Look, got a friendly administration that's going to be helpful. And it could get a little bit easier. Could get a little bit easier for workers to organize and win better wages, hours, conditions, dignity, respect, all the things that we talk about because just the other day, the National Labor Relations Board, evidently, a regional director filed a sweeping complaint against Starbucks, alleging that they violated federal labor law more than 200 times in the Buffalo campaigns. This could be enormous because now the general counsel, Jennifer Abruzzo, she wants to go back and make these captive audience meetings illegal to stop them. Because they should be. You should not have to endure listening to hours on end of union busters try and deceive and lie to you about unions and not give the other side. Now, because they say, well, you know, companies have a right to make their case. And I go, yeah, they do that on day one. In fact, I think, you know, Christian Smalls in the hearing said it best when he goes, you know, on day one, before you even know what your job is, they're inundating you with anti-union propaganda. You know, your first day, there's a video on how bad unions are. So you're being indoctrinated right from the start. They're propagandizing from the beginning. Why do they then need to beat you up even more? And my argument has always been, you know, if you're a decent employer, you don't even need to bring up the dreaded U word. Just be a good company. Be good to people. Don't cheat them. Don't give them crummy benefits. And definitely don't create an industry where you're double the injury rate of everybody else. You know, create that world that Mike Braun was talking about, where you pay superior wages, where you make workers part of the family, part of the business, and reward them by making them part of it and making them, well, believe the rhetoric of, hey, there's an open door. Sadly, when there's an open door policy, sometimes they slam it on you on the way out. That's the sad reality. Now, here's the thing. You know, with this, Starbucks may have to stop their union busting campaigns. Now, look, they got lots of money. They'll figure out how to do other tactics. But this is pretty impressive. Also, the NLRB is saying the folks in Brooklyn, New York are saying at the Amazon place, Amazon, you violate the labor law by doing the same thing. And they're pushing Amazon to agree not to hold these anymore. Now, it's interesting. I love the Amazon defense. This is my favorite. My favorite part of all of this is Amazon's defense. Their defense is, but we've always been able to beat up our workers. Why is now any different? We were always able to hold captive. We've been doing this for decades. Why now? Well, now because people are finally paying attention to just how bad it's been. Now they finally got a group of workers who aren't afraid to stand up. And look, I think the Amazon labor union people figured out how to beat these captive audience meetings. In fact, when you listen to the worker organizers, you know, tell their stories, Amazon made it, you know, virtually impossible for the worker organizers to be in these. They were excluding people because they knew that those workers, you know, knew their rights. They were going after the most vulnerable. And that's what these union busters do. And this is the reason why, again, I think we do need major comprehensive labor law reform to make it easier. And I think this is a step towards doing it. But both of these two companies, giants in their industry, Amazon and Starbucks, both giants in name brand, giants in how the public feels about them, they're the examples in this moment. And while Lindsey Graham was all upset saying, well, you think, you know, Amazon's a bad company. Yeah, they treat their employees poorly. This is a moment. This is a moment that you can make an example. And Amazon can turn this around. They can do the Mike Braun thing. They can treat their workers better. They can. See how easy that is? It's pretty simple. But you have to question whether they will. Now, again, this is one of the wealthiest companies in the country. They pay almost no taxes whatsoever. They could use that money that we give them in tax breaks. Instead of, you know, buying stocks back, they can give it to their workers. Seems sane, seems rational to me. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Tell me what you think. Got any questions, comments? rick@thericksmithshow.com. That's where you send the emails. Hate mail goes at the top. I like that first. Also want to thank our exclusive sponsors, Teamsters Local 1932, for sponsoring our program. Gonna take a quick break. When we come back, Greg Leroy is going to be here from Good Jobs First, going to explain what he had to do at the big hearing last week. Back after this with Greg.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1934. That was the day the West Coast Maritime Strike began. It was an historic strike that shut down the major ports along the Pacific coast. The strike also coincided with the pivotal Minneapolis Teamster Strike and the Toledo Autolite Strike. From Seattle to San Diego, longshoremen walked off the job. Harry Bridges led the Albion Hall Caucus in San Francisco. They demanded higher wages, shorter hours, and union representation. They also demanded a coast-wide agreement and a union hiring hall to replace the hated daily shape-up. Longshoremen were fed up with the gangster-run company union that controlled the arbitrary day labor hiring on the docks. From the pages of the Waterfront Worker Newsletter, militant longshoremen took on the shippers, the government, craft unionism, and racism of the union. On the first day of the strike, dozens of black longshoremen joined the union and convinced others not to scab. Soon, all unions on the docks walked out in solidarity. By May 15th, the West Coast ports were completely shut down and 25,000 were out on strike by the end of the month. In his book, Workers on the Waterfront, Bruce Nelson notes the qualities that made the strike a success. He points to the militancy and discipline required to stand up to the National Guard during the deadly Maine battle on July 5th. The workers' solidarity across craft lines necessary for the San Francisco general strike that followed, a defiant rank-and-file independence, and the understanding that intensive red-baiting could only serve the bosses. Though workers were forced back to work through arbitration, they were awarded their demands that fall. It would take more job actions to make those awards a reality. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2.
Nearly every nation with an advanced economy, and some not so advanced, treats child care as a fundamental public good, essential to nurturing children, families, and the whole society. But not our U.S. of A. Indeed, our so-called leaders relegate millions of working parents and 21 million kids under 5 to the tender mercies of a for-profit market, with child care facilities ranging from impossibly expensive to helter-skelter, unlicensed kiddie corrals. Embarrassingly, while right-wingers mindlessly salute the U.S. as exceptional, they fail to note that what's exceptional about our child care system is that it's such a shambles it can't even be called a system, much less caring. For the past decade, independent journalist and economic analyst Bryce Covert has documented the worsening social crisis caused by this abject failure of leadership. 2/3 of our pre-K kids have both parents in the workforce, meaning care outside the home is essential. 85% of the parents say that finding quality, affordable child care in their area is a problem somewhere between serious and impossible. Nationwide, the annual cost for a 4-year-old's daycare averages about $13,000. Despite millions of working families finding this essential service unaffordable or even unavailable, political leaders have ignored their plight. Child care aid reaches only 15% of qualified kids. Some callous governors even divert chunks of federal child care subsidies to their own political priorities, such as corporate welfare. In 2017, even before COVID-19 abruptly shut down thousands of care centers, 40% of America's children lived in child care deserts, zip codes with zero programs or so few that 2/3 or more of the area's children are unable to get in. This is Jim Hightower saying, is this the best we can do for the future of our nation?
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, I go back to the Sanders Banking Committee hearing question. And it's a simple question. Should taxpayer dollars be going to companies that violate labor law? I mean, to me, pretty simple. if you violate any law. No, the answer should be really simple. But it was interesting to me that some of the people were justifying, no, we can't stop companies from abusing their workers because it would be bad for whatever made up reason. And here to share some thoughts on, why we shouldn't be giving corporate America tax dollars when they abuse their workers or break any law. We'll start there. I've asked Greg LeRoy to come and talk with us. Greg is the executive director of Good Jobs First, their website, goodjobsfirst.org. Greg, thanks for taking time for us.
Great to be with you, Rick.
So let's start right there with that question. Should we be rewarding companies for bad behavior by breaking laws and labor laws or any law for that matter?
No, look, we shouldn't be giving public dollars to companies that break laws, especially labor laws. Labor laws sort of get short shrift here, right? Because if you look at the criteria that states and the feds use to the word is debar companies from contracts, it's like being delinquent on your taxes. It's like underperforming on your contract or knowingly, hiding information about your business. Well, why isn't cheating people's paychecks or making an unsafe workplace or firing people illegally equivalent to that? That's what we're saying. What are we, chopped liver? Are labor law violations, they don't matter anymore? They should matter just as much as all these other kinds of things that can cause companies to get debarred. That's what we're really saying at this hearing. And especially for a company like Amazon that has just got so many kinds of public money baked into its business plan.
Yeah. Now, Lindsey Graham, obviously right from the start went off on why you're only singling out poor Amazon. I don't single out poor Amazon. I don't think any company should get money, but Amazon kind of is the behemoth. They are kind of the cancer that has infected our entire employment system and is changing things so rapidly. I don't think most of us really grasp, how badly the damage is going to shake out in the coming years.
That's right. I mean, as I said in the hearing, if you look at the issue of sort of corporate welfare at the state and local level, there isn't a company I can think of more aggressive right now in that space. 10 years ago in March, Amazon opened a so-called economic development office, which was really a tax break getting office. And since then, it's been averaging about 20 deals a year, that is awards by states and cities. Last year alone, they totaled more than $700 million. We know that the company has a corporate goal of $1 billion a year. I apologize for my phone ringing there. $1 billion a year in tax breaks. And we know they're getting more than $700 million because some of the breaks are not fully disclosed.
Yeah.
So it's real.
No, I mean, I go back to that, the H2Q thing, that whole debacle of searching for another headquarters and the scam that was. And look, right from the beginning, I said, this is a massive ripoff of the taxpayer. It's a massive information gathering system that every community across this country just gave away, cost free to them and cost us taxpayers huge amounts of money. In fact, we don't even get to know what kind of data was handed over. And Amazon was never going to Dubuque, Iowa. They were never going to Pittsburgh. They were going exactly where they went. They were going to Washington, D.C., New York City, and Virginia area. That's where they were going to end up. And everyone knew it, but they toyed with every community across this country, dangling that carrot of, hey, we're going to bring some moderate paying jobs to your neighborhood. Just give us all your information.
Yeah, they American economic development was set back for a year for HQ2, right? People in economic development agencies all over the country, in Frisco and Fresno and every place in between, wasted months and huge amounts of money on special websites, on proposals. They set aside everything else they were doing in many cases, delaying deals, delaying planning, delaying progress. It was a terrible exercise in just sheer power, not to mention, as you said, hoovering up all this information for future real estate deals.
Now, for my friends in Dubuque and in Pittsburgh, I love the area. I'm not putting down the area, but the reality is Amazon was never coming. They were never putting their headquarters there. It was not going to happen. And they proved it to us in the end. In fact, I was saying that all during the whole debacle that it was. But in looking at this, and again, you go back to the organizing campaigns that are going on and the testimony of Christian Smalls, the president of the Amazon Labor Union. which I thought he did a great job putting Lindsey Graham in his place, saying, look, this isn't a political thing. This is a worker thing, which I think we as working people need to get back to. We got to get out of this my team kind of sport mentality of D or R or red shirt or blue shirt and get back to putting on, you know, jeans and a T-shirt and, you know, rolling up our sleeves and getting back to work.
I love that exchange, and I really tip my hat to Christian Smalls for setting his testimony aside for about half the 5 minutes he had and just responding to the outrageous things that Senator Graham had said. And that was the crackling moment in the hearing, frankly. And I didn't think Graham came back very well either.
Yeah, I mean, but it does go to show, Greg, that our laws are broken. We're in a place where there needs to be something, because I talk to workers all the time who are saying, look, I would love to organize. I would love to have a union here. I would love to get the better wages, the better health care, the better retirement security. I would love to have security, all the things that we talk about and that people know unions are able to deliver. I would love to do that, but I just don't want to walk the gauntlet of corporate harassment. I don't want to have to go through the captive audience meetings, the threats, the intimidation, all the stuff that come with this, which is why I think, you know, in this moment, it's so important to highlight the contagious nature of victory and the campaigns that are winning, but also the companies that are doing bad things.
Yeah, I think that was the most aggravating part of what got said by Senator Graham. To hear him talk about it, the National Labor Relations Act is just fine. It's all working intact. Everybody's got their rights. People get contracts if they so choose. When we all know for decades that's not been true at all. We know that it's broken. We know the system's broken. The act's got to be reformed. We need things like the PRO Act or its predecessor proposals to fix it. And you know, we're not going to get good jobs and less inequality in this country until that's true.
Now, one of the things I thought was interesting, and I don't want you to talk bad about one of the other panelists, but the argument against the PRO Act was, and I forget the woman's name, but she was from the Heritage Foundation. What you expect, you expect the Heritage Foundation to be against workers, and I fully understand that. But, you know, having companies, you know, sign neutrality agreements and allow workers to vote their conscience, I guess in her opinion was a bad idea because it's the company's responsibility to, or it would harm the workers from a company. I don't remember her whole argument, but the whole thing was it would be bad for workers if companies didn't harass them and let them know that unions are bad. That was the basic premise of her thought. And I'm going, that's interesting gymnastics. Congratulations. I'm glad you get paid a lot to dream that kind of stuff up.
Yeah, I mean, she had the classic, what we call yo-yo rap. That is, you're on your own, yo-yo. You know, everybody's better off if they fend for themselves, if they just work a little harder, if they just suck up more to the boss, if they just, you know, fill in the blank. Collective action is not the right response. That's not the way to promote general prosperity, you know. Don't get near that union because it's not an individualistic tool. And I just think that history never proves that true.
Yeah, it's one of those things where if unions didn't work, if they were so ineffective, you know, why would Bezos be spending millions of dollars? Why would Amazon be spending so much? Why would corporate America spend all of this money on union busters to do this kind of stuff? You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're here with Greg LeRoy. Greg is the executive director of Good Jobs First. Their website, goodjobsfirst.org. We'll get links out on social media. I can check out the incredible work that they do. You guys, one of the things that you do, and I think is so important, is you follow the money. You follow where our tax dollars go and how much of it these big corporations are putting in their pockets. And this is where I think it's important for average everyday working stiffs like me to go, look, I'm not anti-business. You know, I want the mom and pops on Main Street to do real well. I struggle with these conglomerates who have such outweighted power, you know, like the Amazons, like the Walmarts, you know, like the Starbucks, you know, these giant behemoths who, you know, inflict their power on the rest of us. I want them held accountable. And it's the money that we give them, our tax dollars. I think that's the way that we can try and reel them back in. And it's a lot, isn't it? I mean, we give them a lot, don't we?
We do. I mean, the estimates run from between 60 and $90 billion a year that states and cities and counties give away to companies in the name of economic development. There's a large body of evidence. Most of that money is wasted. In most cases, companies, a vast majority of cases, maybe 94% of the time, companies would do what they did anyway, without the incentives. We know that the program rules have gotten so loose that they're really just kind of gimmies. They're just kind of automatic things that companies get for asking for them. There's money laying around on the tables, and companies are grabbing the money laying on the tables, essentially.
Yeah. And this is the bigger thy neighbor economic development. We've talked about this in the past.
Right.
These companies
right.
know that there's a sugar jar out there, and they've got their face nose deep in it because, hey, I'm going to get mine. And this is
yep.
where I think is important. And this is where this hearing, I think, is important. And I think the president is on the right path of, okay, if we're going to give you all this sweetener, we're going to load your pockets up with our money. It's got to benefit us somehow. These jobs have got to be at least materialize. I mean, I look at the Foxconn deal. They told us how many, you know, thousands, 13,000 jobs. There are, what, a couple hundred, maybe 100 at best. There've got to be tangible goods for we the people, we the working people. And those jobs better got to be good jobs, not just Mick jobs. They got to be actually good jobs with good benefits, retirement security, health security, a future. They got to be union jobs, in my view. And to say, hey, neutrality, that should be the minimum of what we ask. Or at least that's my thought. I'm curious yours.
I think that's right. We've said forever at Good Jobs First, it's on our website, unionization is economic development. Unionization is the way we get rising living standards, the way we get less inequality, the way we get less poverty. It's those charts correlating the decline in union density with the rise in inequality. They're exactly right. That's the problem. And we have low union density because we have the most hostile laws of any industrial democracy enabling people to form a new union. If we had modern laws like other industrial democracies, we'd have higher union density and less inequality and less poverty, period.
Yeah, because I say, and I've said it a bunch of times, I think inequality is one of the biggest problems we have in this country. We've got a lot, but, you know, mass inequality, economic inequality is, I would put at the top of the list of problems that we have, because look, the gap between the rich and the poor, and the ultra wealthy and everybody else is growing larger and larger. I mean, we're right back in the Gilded Age. We've got our robber barons, we've got Musk and Bezos and Gates and the rest of them, and then there's all the rest of us who are just trying to get by. And I don't think it's too much to ask to say, look, we're going to make these jobs good jobs. They're going to be union jobs. And they're going to be the kind our grandparents' generation built the most prosperous working class in history on. I don't think that's too much, do you?
No, I think that's our imperative. That's what we belong trying to do. That's why we need to reform labor law to make that possible.
And also our procurement and the money that we give away. Because here's the part. You know, I think we should be limiting how much CEOs put in their pocket. I think how much we should be limiting how much stock buyback money they can use. The fact that a company is going to, this drives me insane. The fact that a company is going to go, hey, I got $2 billion. What should we do with this $2 billion is just laying around that we got all these tax breaks from? Well, let's just buy our stock back because I can think of nothing better to do with this money. I'm not going to give raises to my employees, not better health care, not better retirement, not better equipment, not invest in new technologies, not new plants, nothing better but to give it to rich people is insane to me, Greg.
And you know, the same thing is true of subsidies, right? We've documented $4.2 billion in subsidies given to Amazon alone. Before that, it was Walmart. Walmart was in retail. 90% of their warehouses and many, many hundreds of their stores were not only subsidized with economic development tax breaks, but also challenged property tax assessments. They want to chisel down on their property tax rates. This retail space is full of history of companies gorging at the public trough.
And it should be us. And this is where I implore my working class listeners, contact your representatives. Every tax dollar we give to these big companies have to come with strings attached. Because here's the part of it, Greg. These big companies, you know what they can do? They cannot take it.
Right.
Seems right. Simple to me. Either you agree to what we were asking, we'll give you money, we'll invest in your company, but we want something for our investment. And that investment should be, here's a list. If you don't like our terms, you can go anywhere else and get money from anybody else. I think that's fair, don't you?
I do. I mean, we go further and say let's just rewrite the rules to say the big boys don't qualify. You know, once you're beyond a certain size, once you're beyond a certain sales level or employment size, you're okay. You don't need help anymore. You've flown the coop. Let's keep our resources available for the small companies like the local retailers that you mentioned, like startups, like small manufacturing companies that are trying to figure out niches to stay on shore. Let's reward the good actors in the economy who really have valid needs.
I like that much better. In fact, that's the way we're going to go from now on, because that's a better idea. No more money for Amazon. And this is where, even as you know, Sean O'Brien, the president of the Teamsters, was saying, we shouldn't give money to these big companies. Maybe we need to get him on the show and get him to amend that statement, say no more money for these big companies. You're right. We need to be helping the job creators at the bottom, the folks who are helping in our communities. I like that idea better.
Amazon's a job destroyer. Let's remember, the rise of e-commerce, of which Amazon is 40 or 50%, is the reason why we're destroying our bricks and mortar retail jobs. In these same years, when you've seen the rise of e-commerce in recent years, we've had record numbers of store closures. So you're just churning jobs. You're dislocating retail clerks and storage people, and you're creating, but you're just moving the jobs into warehouses. And in many cases, dangerous sped up warehouses.
Yeah, and that came out too. I mean, they're leading the industry. They're leading the industry in injuries. I guess that's something to be proud of if that's your goal, to churn people. I mean, they've got 150% turnover rate. Why not? Last question I've got for you, out of this hearing, sure. Which again, I hope we're going to get links out so people can watch. I hope everyone does, because I think it's an important piece of political theater that folks should pay attention to. What's the message that you think people should take away when they're done watching this?
When it comes to corporate welfare, you know, the only way we will get Amazon out of the public trough is if people hold their public officials accountable and say, quit giving money to a company that has to build all these warehouses because that's their business plan. Quit giving money to companies that are going to do this stuff anyway, build the warehouses anyway.
Now And they were going to build them where they were going to build them, because it's all about location, location, location. It's not about tax rates. It's not about anything else. It's about location, location, location. But we used to know that, at least until the lobbyists got a hold of our legislatures.
But yes, Greg, amen.
I appreciate the time. I appreciate the work. Great, great testimony. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
Thanks, Rick. Great to be with you.
Good stuff. Our good friend Gregory Leroy. Make sure you check out his website, goodjobsfirst.org. He's the executive director there at Good Jobs First. Amazing stuff. If you want to check out how much money that we're giving away to these corporate America criminals, I'll put it there. The trough, they got a subsidy tracker you should check out. You will be, like me, outraged, as you should be. Gonna take a quick break right back after this. If you're just joining us, make sure you grab the podcast. Never miss a moment. Share with your friends, and also, share, like, subscribe. Back after this, stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people on the talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. If you missed any portion of our program or want more information, go to therickSmithShow.com, download the podcast, or you can email us at rick@therickSmithShow.com.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1972. That was the day that employees at the Ferro Manufacturing Company went out on strike. The company was one of the top producers of men's and boys' pants in the country, and the second largest employer in El Paso, Texas. The majority of workers were Chicano. More than 80% were women. These workers worked long hours for low wages and were required to meet a high quota demand. In the late 1960s, some of the male employees began to discuss their working conditions and what they could do to change things. One employee remembered the early days of organizing sometimes happened after softball games between the teams of workers from the different departments in the plant. We'd sit around after the game and talk about these things and the union. Men working in the cutting room voted to affiliate with the Amalgamated Clothing Workers of America. Workers from the San Antonio plant came to El Paso to support the union effort. These workers were fired. In response, 500 El Paso workers walked off the job. They demanded the right to have a union. Soon, more than 3,000 Ferro employees went out on strike. The strike cause won the support of the Roman Catholic bishop in El Paso, who supported a boycott against Ferro pants. The AFL-CIO called for a boycott. The campaign against Ferro soon spread across the country. Even though the company brought in scab replacement labor, the effort to get a union continued. The fight wore on until March of 1974, when the National Labor Relations Board found in favor of the employees who had been fired. Unionization had come to FARA. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at laborhistoryin2. Are you underpaid and overworked? Is a living wage and employee benefits like affordable health care more of a dream than a reality for you and your family? If so, it's time to form a union. Don't be denied the wages and benefits you deserve. Come together in a union with the power of numbers. A union is not a privilege, it's your right, and it will make a difference. Contact Teamsters Local 1932, a powerful and successful labor union in San Bernardino, by visiting teamsters1932.org/organize to start today. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, TheRickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick shout out to the governor of Minnesota. This is, you know, Tim Walz, good on you, man. Last week they signed a plan to distribute some $500 million to 650,000 frontline hero workers. These are the healthcare workers. These are the grocery store employees. These are the people who are the essential heroes. You remember them, the essential heroes who helped us get through the pandemic. All of the folks who had to show up. They're going to use some of the money that they got from the American Rescue Plan to give out checks to all of those frontline heroes. They're expected to get about $750 a piece. Going to help in this time. But hey, as a thank you, hey, you helped us make it through. If corporate America didn't help you, if corporate America didn't reward you for being the heroes that we know you are, here's a little bit of something. And look, $750 ain't much, but it is something. And I give Tim Walz credit for that. Something I think a lot of states should be considering. Doing pretty simple. Real quick, I got an email from Anthony from Colton, California, listening on KCAA. He sent me this. He said, Rick, I heard you talk up the union drive at Amazon, and seriously don't understand why you or anyone else would be advocating paying someone else to represent you to your employer. I see Amazon running a campaign calling it do without dues. Explain to me why you think paying dues is a good idea. I am not being a blank here. I really want to hear your explanation. The real quick explanation, real quick, in my lifetime, I've been a union member my entire life, over 30 years. And in those 30 years, I've probably spent about $20,000 in dues over that course of the years. And in that time, I've received superior wages, well in excess of what my non-union counterparts would have gotten, anywhere between 18% and 30% higher wages. So just that alone pays for it. The best healthcare benefits that are out there. In fact, I've got friends in Congress who are jealous of the healthcare that I get, that I don't pay for. Now, my contemporaries, my non-union contemporaries, they pay for their health insurance out of their pocket. That is a massive savings. So for that $50 a month that I pay in union dues, I not only get superior wages, but I get the health care benefit that our union negotiated. Also, I get paid vacation. I get paid time off. I get the dignity and respect of job security all down the list. All of that. I get a say in my working conditions. All of that. But more importantly, I don't get slammed with a whole bunch of harassment by a company with infantile kind of slogans like be a doer, not a doer, or, you know, do it without dues. I don't have any of that stuff. I don't have, like Delta did, telling their people, you could get a game console for your kids or take your kids to a baseball game instead of paying union dues. No, I can still do that. I can do all of those things. Because I do have superior wages and I have health security. So when my daughter broke her arm, you know what I didn't think about? I didn't think about how I was going to pay for it. I thought about how am I going to get my daughter to the quickest hospital to get her the help that she needed. That's what I thought about, Anthony. For me, it is a no-brainer, and I wish I could get the kind of return on investment that I get for my $50 dues dollars. I wish I could get that out of every dime I've got. Just my thoughts. Thanks for the email, Anthony. Appreciate it. You can email me, Rick@TheRickSmithShow.com. If you've got any questions, love to hear them.
Also, if you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast at therickssmithshow.com or wherever you get your podcasts. And a special thanks to our sponsor, Teamsters Local 1932. Make sure you check out their website, teamsters1932.org. Thanks for being here. See you back here next time.
You're listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250